Hello and welcome. I am your host for the evening, Goblin Queen, and tonight we are going to continue a series of mine where I read stories from a website called Liminal Earth. And this is a place where people submit their first-hand encounters with ghosts, cryptids, UFOs, anything weird or unexplainable. And then in addition to that, they also tag the location of the encounter on a map. So while we read the stories, which I have about five of them, I will have Google Street View footage rolling in the backgrounds of the actual general locality of the experience. And then in between the stories, I will give my thoughts and gentle analysis, but then also, if anything turns up in the region of interest, whether it's history or folklore or local legend, then we'll dive into that as well. So, if that sounds good to you, let's get started. Our first story takes place in Mississippi in 2021 and was submitted by Christina. It's called South Haven Rental House. We sold our home and needed a short rental, and were having a hard time getting to see a place before someone took it out from under us. This created a sense of urgency, and so the next available property that we came across, we just put down a deposit in the hopes it would work out for the short term before really looking at it. We moved into what I would consider a liminal space. For one, we were transitioning in our lives, and in my opinion, rentals are inherently liminal because of their non-permanent nature. Our family of six settled in well. The house had many quirks with old wiring, do-it-yourself renovations with switches in weird places. The backyard was small, but big enough for a nice patio and two huge trees. One was a beautiful tulip poplar tree that was about 10 feet in diameter, and a smaller tree that I had forgotten was even there until I looked the property up again for this write-up. At this rental, we had a good bit of paranormal activity, and personally, my first. There was something that lurked in the hallway and front living room, which was used as my art studio. There were multiple black shadow creature sightings by everyone in the house. I even caught the voice of something on video by accident once. We had objects thrown across the room from off the mantel, and the kids were unsettled in the home. The most bizarre of all the encounters were by me, and like I said, my first real encounters with something. I awoke one night in a panic by my youngest child, aged 1 year, screaming an ungodly, "I'm terrified" scream. If you are a parent, you may know the difference between cries. This was a scared cry. Our bed was positioned against the wall, and I slept on the inner side with my daughter between me and my husband, who was on the outside of the bed. When I looked, my daughter was sitting upright in the bed, staring at the wall behind me, while screaming as though something terrible was on the wall near the foot of the bed. I was on my right side facing her and had to lift myself up and turn towards the wall to find out what she was staring at in such a terrified state. Immediately, I saw a large, busted hole in the wall, like an opening to an underground tunnel, with the dim light from our room illuminating just the interior of the hole. In the quickest movements, I leapt up with my daughter in hand and jumped over my husband to get as far away from the hole as possible. But when I landed on the other side of the bed and turned back to awaken my husband, there was nothing but a bare wall again. No hole. I immediately felt crazy for as terrified I had been, but there was that look on my child's face that was unmistakable, and that haunting scream that awoke me. She had seen something, and it spooked her. I know what I saw, and by now my husband had awoken and was looking bewildered at me. It felt strange trying to explain it to him, and it seemed so far out that it was hard for him to believe me. A few days passed, and I woke up in the bed one morning. My husband was gone to work, and I am on the outer edge of the bed with my daughter in the center. I'm on my back and open my eyes to see what looks like a spider dropping from the ceiling directly above my face. Spider was my immediate thoughts, but my eyes continued to focus on the dark object before me, trying to use light and shadow to determine how large and far away it was. I can only speculate that my brain tried to figure out what it was seeing when it didn't have a context to define the shape. It took only a few seconds of focus to see that it was no spider, but a small, undulating ball of something. It was a plasma-like substance, not like smoke. It was more solid than vapor. When I started to try and examine it more deeply, it was as if it sensed that I was looking at it and actually seeing it, like we saw each other, as if glancing into someone's eyes and you quickly turn away. It did just that. It quickly flew out the window above my bed and into the backyard. I jumped up and looked out back, but saw nothing. I never saw it again. I would like to add that during our stay at this house, and before these occurrences, I had begun writing, what felt like automatically, a book. The book dealt with fae lore, and I was beginning deep research into the subject of the fae, and changelings in particular. I seriously felt like both experiences were warnings to stop my meddling. I quit writing that book, and we moved out of the rental after our year was up, but not before buying a house in the same neighborhood, because we really fell in love with the area. We had lots more experiences at the new location, but never the plasma ball. I will never forget these experiences because they were so vivid and real to me. They are all memorialized as tangible happenings in my experience as a human. Even though I stopped the book, it started me on a much more intensive journey into the paranormal and otherworldly genre of encounters. So, a lot going on in that story, and in that house. I liked their comment that they said that rentals are inherently liminal because of their non-permanent nature. I mean, that tracks, it seems like it. And maybe some people think that only houses or old houses or places where people died are haunted. And I don't really think that that's a hard and fast rule. Well, one, I think that things can be haunted, quote unquote, by multiple different things. It doesn't have to just be, you know, a deceased person. But yeah, I mean, apartments, they could potentially have more kind of weird shit going on in them because there's so much energy and so much change and there's different people all living their lives and people coming and going. And yeah, I mean, I've lived in mostly apartments for a long time now, and there's a lot to deal with energetically, that's for sure. But thought those are very interesting comments. People also do say that doing renovations on a house stirs up activity. Maybe rentals do too, because people are coming and going. Things are always changing. I mean, if someone moves in, they're rearranging things. Yeah, so it's interesting to think about. I really, really liked that experience they had, although it sounds like a very scary experience, when their child woke up screaming, which I'm not a parent, but I can only imagine hearing your child make that particular scream. I'm sure it just shoots this primal alarm off in your body. Yeah, it's gotta be a horrible thing to hear and to see your child's just genuinely terrified. But waking up and turning around and seeing a large busted hole in the wall, like an opening to an underground tunnel, and they said the dim light from their room was illuminating just the very interior of the hole. I wish there was a little bit more of a description, but they say it looks like an opening to an underground tunnel. So maybe just like brick or stone or something. Yeah, but how weird is that? And they said it was large. I wonder how large. I just love to get all the little details, but really strange. That kind of reminded me of a story I read in, I'll put it on screen what video it was. I think it was a video I did about basements, or an episode I did about basements, where these kids were playing hide and seek in their house, and they opened this closet, and there was a staircase going down that was never there before, and never there again. But they went down the stairs, and it went to this, like, dungeon, and, oh, anyway, you should go listen to it. So I really like those kind of stories where just one aspect of your house, this very familiar place, is changed just once. So if anyone has any stories like that, something about that really, really intrigues me. I think it's just because it's like a glitch in the matrix kind of thing. Very reality bending. Very intriguing to me. Not sure if I want to experience it though. Probably break your brain a little bit. And then the other really strange one they saw was, again, in bed, something kind of descending from the ceiling towards them, and they describe it as a small undulating ball of a plasma-like... Be Radley on the microphone. A small undulating ball of a plasma-like substance that was more solid than vapor. So, kind of hard to picture. It seemed like to her there was an intelligence or an awareness or something about it. An acknowledgement, like, I see you and you see me. And it flew out the window into the backyard. Very weird. And finally, during their stay at this house, but before all this stuff started happening, the OB said they began writing this book. Felt like they were automatically writing it about fairies and changelings. That's so strange. Like, was it something that they had an interest in before? Did it just come out of nowhere? Weird. But then they felt like these two experiences, which I'm guessing they mean the plasma ball and the hole in the wall, were warnings to stop. Stop writing the book. So, does she assign those experiences as fairy experiences? I often read from the Fairy Census, which is an academic research project collecting people's firsthand encounters with fairies, but there are some really weird experiences in there. Things that you wouldn't maybe necessarily, if someone said, what's a fairy look like? Probably most people would think of a little winged woman or person, a little small person, right? But people submit really strange things in there. One kind of similar to this plasma substance was this like glittering cloud of like a golden globby material seen at a bus stop at night. People will report like weird geometric shapes. There's such a variety. So I won't go on too much. You can look up my fairies playlist if you want to hear some of those stories. But I wonder if the OP would submit these experiences to the fairy census. If for some reason they're listening, I encourage it if you do think that they are fairy experiences. There's no right or wrong answer to what is a fairy experience, but by the way, I mean, that's part of the research, is what do people consider a fairy experience in modern sightings? So you get mixed messages when it comes to fairies. Sometimes people say you shouldn't talk about them. The rural kind of Irish fairy faith would not even say their name. They would call them the good neighbors or the good people or the other crowd, and not say fairies, because you really just didn't want to potentially call on them in any way, because they're very unpredictable and dangerous in that way, that they just don't operate under this human moral compass. And she was writing about changelings, which are a pretty nefarious part of fairy lore, taking a human baby and replacing it with a fairy baby, or maybe just a stock, which is a piece of wood that would look like your baby at first, until a few days later, it just kind of rots away. So it's very sad, because there are, of course, implications that great harm was done to human babies at one point, and probably not necessarily by fairies, more so by humans, because the way you would find out if your baby was a changeling or not is to throw it in the fire, poke it with a hot poker. Some people would just leave it outside, like in a field. So that's pretty dark stuff. Other people think that the fairies really liked being talked about. I don't know. But it kind of reminded me of one of my favorite books, enormous novel, works of fiction, is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. And it isn't 100% about fairies, but fairies play a huge part in it. And she did so much amazing research into folklore and history. And so she kind of did the same thing. She did a lot of research into fairy lore and wrote a lot about fairies. And she writes about the scary fairies. Or the morally bankrupt, I guess you would say, fairies. And she ended up developing an illness. I think it's chronic fatigue syndrome, if I'm not mistaken. And she kind of thought that, I don't know if she really thought this, if she was being 100% serious or a little bit cheeky, but I remember reading an interview with her where she said that she kind of thought that this was a punishment for writing about the fairies. They said, yeah, exactly what this person said, like, you meddled. So anyway, I just thought that was very interesting. Long story, I really enjoyed it though. A lot going on. The rest of them are actually going to be quite short, but there's some interesting stuff we can get into with a couple of them. So let's go ahead and read the next one. This one took place in Maine in 2021, and it's called Dear Boy. I was heading back from a long walk across the big field near my home. I had to cut across some railroad tracks and then the smaller field to get back onto the road. As I came up over the tracks and looked down into the small field, I saw, in my peripheral vision, a blonde teenage boy in a blaze orange t-shirt standing in the field. When I turned to look directly at him, he wasn't a boy at all, but a young deer. This could have been, and most likely was, my eyes playing tricks on me. But the encounter stuck in my head for some reason, and I remembered reading fairy stories where you could only see things properly when you looked at them sideways or through a holy stone. I've seen other strange things in that area since, so I'm less likely to dismiss it now than I was then. So, I thought it was kind of curious that they almost changed from hunting attire to a deer. They're wearing a blaze orange t-shirt, which, I'm sorry, I had to look up what it was. I didn't know. Blaze orange, I wasn't familiar. Also known as safety orange, is a hue used to set object apart from their surroundings. So it's used for different things, like a road sign will be orange, but then also hunters' vests and jackets and things like that will be blaze orange. Or safety orange. I didn't know that. Okay, I'm from the suburbs. I've never been hunting in my life. So they went from wearing a blaze orange t-shirt to being a young deer. And it was interesting that it was also a teenager and a young deer. They said that it could have been their eyes playing tricks on them or whatever. I mean, a blonde teenager in a bright orange shirt and a deer look pretty different, even if you're seeing them out of the corner of your eye. Who knows? And then they did say that they thought about it because they remembered reading fairy stories where you could only see things meaning fairies, I would assume, properly when you looked at them sideways out of the side of your eye or the corner of your eye. And I have talked recently about how corners are this space where you have the potential to perceive things that, yeah, maybe you can't straight on or with just normal everyday perception. I think a lot of people, myself included, you see something out of the corner of your eye and you look, it's not there, but was it there? You just can't see it now that you're looking dead on. They also say that you can see fairies properly, they've heard, when you look through a holy stone. And they spell it H-O-L-E-Y. It's not H-O-L-Y. Holy as in it has a hole through it. Also called a hagstone, and these are very much a part of fairy lore, and they have all kinds of different superstitions and folklore associated with them. But the one with fairy lore is that, yeah, if you find a stone, probably a small stone, that has a naturally occurring hole through the middle, whether it's because of running water or maybe a little, there's some kind of little mollusk or something that makes holes through stones, if you look through it, maybe you might be able to see fairies and fairy realms and things not normally seen, ghosts, perhaps. I've tried, and I used to collect them. I don't as much anymore, but at one point I had just one of those little plastic storage totes full of them. And I've made things with them, put them on chains and put them on these kind of mobile ornament things that I've made for myself and for people, and hung those out in nature and stuff for other people to find, because I love that folklore surrounding them. But they're also said to be good luck and protection from hexes and witches and nightmares. Some legends say that they can help with fertility and curing illnesses and ailments. So very cool. I love hagstones. That's what I've always called them. But they are also called holy stones, which makes sense. So I was really interested by the look of this town. And I just kept clicking around the street view as I was gathering the footage I needed for this section. I just kept going. If you're just listening on a podcast platform, this town, which is called Richmond, Maine, it's pretty small. I mean, in 2020, the population was 3,500. That's pretty small for the U.S. It's on a river called the Kennebec River, which is named after the indigenous people that once inhabited it. But it has all these beautiful Greek Revival homes. And this is something that the town is known for, and it's unique to this area. And these were built in the mid-1800s. Also, it was once the center of the largest Slavic-speaking settlement in the United States. This is kind of interesting because I did come across some kind of Slavic church as I was clicking along. And then also, beside it, across the river, well, the river actually kind of forks around this very small island. This island is part of a wildlife area that's maintained by the state. So the Kennebec tribe, which the river is named after, part of the Abenaki peoples, they used to use the island for their summer hunting, so they'd have camps over there. European settlers began building up the island in the 18th century, but by the 1940s, the settlement had become abandoned due to changes in the economy and environment. So a ghost town now remains on this 4-mile road that runs the length of the island. So the island's only about 4 miles long. It's really small, but on it, it has several houses. There's a graveyard. There's old farm fields that can all still be found among a mix of wetland and forest. And it's open to the public. There's campsites on the island. You can camp there and walk around this abandoned island. You just have to get yourself over there. You have to kayak over from Richmond, as the ferry that used to take people over no longer operates. Pretty cool. So you probably will, if you go there, you probably have the place mostly to yourself, I think. Really interesting place. But if you live in Maine and you're nearby and you can kayak, I'd go. All right, we're going to move on to our next story. I have another shape-shifting deer story. Might as well. This one took place in Georgia in 2023. It was submitted by Amanda, and it's called Shape-Shifting Deer. I was exploring in the woods near a river. I accidentally stayed out later than I meant to, and the sun began to set. As I started to walk towards home, I saw what appeared to be a human sprinting through the woods, maybe 50 feet away from me, going in the opposite direction. When it was directly in front of me, it stopped and dropped all fours, and was clearly a very large deer. It stared at me. I was thoroughly freaked out and started running. As I ran, I heard my name called from behind 3 times. I kept running and did not look back. I do not stay in the woods once the sun starts to set anymore. Okay, so I like the story. I think it's cool. I don't find it as compelling as the last one. I don't know. This probably sounds pretty silly, but it was the name being called 3 times at the end that took me out of it. The human dropping to the ground and becoming a deer wasn't what took me out. It was the name being called 3 times. I don't know why. That just, I can't say exactly. But I wanted to include it because, I mean, I don't know. Hey, I don't know what they saw or what they heard. But also, I already had one shape-shifting deer story and I found another one. So might as well. So that's kind of all I have for that one. Next, we are going to go on down to New Zealand and read a story submitted by Guy Smith that took place in 2019 called Tent Humanoid. My brother and I were in a 2-person tent getting ready to sleep. Then all of a sudden, neon blue light appeared, and we could just see it through the tent. It then got closer and resembled the shape of a humanoid creature. It was about 4 feet tall, then pressed its hands against the tent. It had very long fingers and big hands. My brother and I were frozen in fear. The creature then slowly walked away. For about 2 minutes, we were dead quiet. Then I peeped my head out of the tent and saw no trace of the creature. All right, a very short one. As I said, most of these are pretty short. I included this one. I did think that it was interesting, but also the location where it took place is pretty stunning. It's a campground. This is in Twizel, New Zealand. It is a campground on Lake Ruatoniwa. I'm not sure exactly how you say that, but wow, it is a beautiful place. The lake is absolutely beautiful. And it's interesting to get a story from New Zealand, right? So since they only saw it through their tent, can't really rule out that it was maybe just a person. I don't know, maybe they were carrying some kind of blue light, or they had, yeah, some kind of light with them, and they decided to be a weirdo and put their hands on someone's tent. I don't know. There aren't a lot of details, and I wasn't there. But it sounds really creepy. And I'm not much of a camper. I love nature, but I don't know. I don't really like camping. I feel kind of bad saying that because I feel like I should. But tents, camping, I don't know. Maybe I'll get back into it at some point. At this point, I think I need like a cabin, sadly. I wish I liked camping. I will say, ever since I saw the Blair Witch Project, I mean, that was like what Psycho did for showers. The Blair Witch Project did for tents, I think. I mean, if you're in your tents, you can just hear sounds, and they probably sound really spooky because you can't see what's going on. Like, if you hear something walking around your tent, I would imagine, because I haven't done a lot of tent camping, some, but it's been a long time, that it's pretty creepy because you can't see what it is. So it could just be a squirrel or something, but you don't know. You probably know if it's a squirrel rather than a human. And then, yeah, I mean, if you just see like the vague outline of something, especially it's a weird color. It's not like a standard flashlight color. And then it touches your tent. I mean, that's no good. So creepy, whether it was a person or not. But really, it was kind of the location that sold me on that story. I have one more. And with this one, we're going to get a bit of interesting folklore from it. So this next story took place in Brazil. It was translated from Portuguese. They include the Portuguese and then the English. I'm guessing that whoever runs the site, they probably took the Portuguese submission and put it into Google Translate, I would think. So it might not be the best translation, but it's what we have. So this took place in 2018 and was submitted by Pamela, and it's called Mother of Gold Fire. It was around 9 p.m. I live on the farm, and my mother-in-law's house was a neighboring farm. We were going to her house. My husband and I were on a motorbike when we saw a fire from afar. Her house had a crossroads. We saw a strong fire from afar, so we stopped halfway to call her to ask if there were people there building a fire. But we didn't have time to call her, because when we stopped, within seconds, the fire was already in our path. We turned the motorbike and went home as fast as we could, and the fire, still behind us, only stopped when we managed to turn into the entrance to the house. It was a huge ball of fire known as Mother of Gold. We had already heard about this ball of fire, but we had never seen it. Even today, in that area, people report seeing this ball of fire. All right, this one caught my attention. I know that it might be a little hard to piece together because it is a translation. It's probably a really bad translation too, because it was probably done through Google, I assume. But yeah, basically, they're driving on a motorbike to their mother-in-law's neighboring farm. They see a fire in the distance, and before they can even call, their mother-in-law and ask about the fire. It's rushing towards them. And then they describe it as a ball of fire. So it wasn't like, doesn't seem like it was a fire traveling along the ground or anything. But what caught my attention in particular, I mean, I think it's a pretty interesting story, but that they mentioned that it was known, something that's known as Mother of Gold. So luckily I was able to find out a little bit about the Mother of Gold. It's really interesting. In Portuguese, it's called something like Maia de Ouro, something like that. I know I'm going to have a terrible pronunciation, but here's this really small entry from a Wikipedia page on Brazilian mythology. Quote, a powerful and lethal being that protects gold ores. It is usually seen from afar as a globe of fire that flies from mountain to mountain. It can be roughly translated as Mother of Gold, and it is possibly a popular attempt to explain the ball lightning phenomenon, marsh gas, or meteors entering the atmosphere, end quote. It also has an association with UFOs because of the tendency to appear flying through the dark skies. So, Mother of Golds, this phenomenon, it can appear as a giant fireball, as it did in the story, but it's also believed to transform into a beautiful woman with long golden hair and a white silk dress. And it seems like it appears around gold deposits or treasure or mineral deposits, something like that. And rather than a way of kind of signaling that they're there, there's some folklore that these little balls of fire, almost like little candlelight or lantern light, will hover above buried gold, kind of as a signifier to dig there. I think that's brought up in Dracula, I'm pretty sure. But she actually, the Mother of Golds, she actually protects treasure and gold deposits versus leading people to treasure. Because, you know, if you see her coming, she's a big ball of fire. So, of course, it's going to send you running, I would think. And because of her strong association with gold deposits, it's believed the legend originated in the late 17th, early 18th century when gold mining was a major economic activity in Brazil. It seems like, based on what I've read, that this legend is more popular in specific regions and probably more rural communities in Brazil. Also, one more thing I found. This is on the Brazilian Wikipedia page for the Mother of Gold. Quote, in another version of the legend, the Mother of Gold also takes care of women who are mistreated by their husbands and therefore unhappy in marriages. Thus, with her stunning beauty, she takes the unwanted husbands to a cave away from their family. There, the Mother of Gold holds them the rest of their lives. Likewise, she gets other husbands who will make wives happy, end quote. So, sounds like she also protects women. Very cool. So, yeah, that's the basic gist of the Mother of Gold, and there are specific folk tales about her. There was one where there was a slave, and she led them to gold so that they could help themselves out of slavery, get a little money. And she said to the slave, she's like, but don't tell anyone where this gold is. And this was during the gold mining rush. And I don't think it was maliciously done, but then the slave ended up, was pressured into telling a prospector about the gold that he found, what was shown. And then, so he goes to get it, the prospector goes to get it, and the Mother of Gold collapses the mine on this prospector. So she will take lethal vengeance on people who are trying to take her gold. Very interesting. So she's some kind of like elemental earth guardian, but she's also seemingly a guardian of women. So I was really happy to find that this legend and this story. And yeah, it sounds like they saw it. So does that mean that there is gold in the area? I mean, according to how the story goes, it seems like it, right? So with that, we are going to close out for the night. These tend to be a little bit shorter because there is full video editing involved, so it takes me more time. But if you do enjoy this format, I do have a playlist. This is number 16 in the series, the Liminal Earth series. So check out the playlist if you like the format and you want to see more interesting places and hear more interesting regional folklore and legend. But we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back very soon with more stories. So until next time, take care and good night.